Hello. Thank you for coming here. Thank you for waking up that early. I hope you also had lots of fun around here, because I have to warn you, this might be a bit boring. We'll talk here about law, about European law regarding network and digital technologies. And sometimes law can be a bit boring. But I'll try to explain how we can try to make things better. We can try to influence the law, and we try to make the people who write the law avoid making big mistakes when it comes to digital technologies and internet. We founded La Quadrature du Net with Christophe Esperne and Philippe Aigrin a few months ago, like 10 months ago or something, because we felt that there was a global problem with the way the regulator talked about digital technologies and internet. For some years, we all had been active in this field, and we faced a few recurring problems, various problems, like seeing people writing the law and not understanding correctly what they were doing, not understanding the true nature of the network and the digital technologies, putting some broad terms into the law that were very dangerous for everybody, and that give legal uncertainty. And who here heard already about the telecoms package for an information? Okay, that's a lot. I guess I never talked in front of such an educated audience. Most of you have heard already of this notion of lawful content that was all around in the telecoms package. We'll talk about it more later. Such vague wordings being written in the law are a major cause of legal uncertainty and are a kind of legal weapon for people who want to gain more control over the users of the network. And when you see law being used as a weapon, then we have to defend ourselves. And defend ourselves means using our knowledge of the network and the technologies to talk about it. So then there is the political problem of people who might be there to serve interests that are not the general interests. You see who I'm talking about. You see the industries, the entertainment industries, who want more and more control over the network in order to preserve their business models. There were a lot of problems and questions we were facing each time law was coming to the digital environment. And so we founded this initiative thinking we would become a kind of toolbox, a kind of toolkit, providing input for people willing to act on those issues, making synthesis, analysis, web-based tools for campaigning, for keeping track of the process, and allowing people to participate into the lawmaking process. So we gather support from a few international organizations, some of which you might recognize: the EFF, the Open Society Institute, Privacy International, and European associations that right from the beginning were sharing our views on the way regulation shall be made when it relates to the network. We all share a common vision of what the network is. We all know how structuring it is for the future of our societies. We all know that it's the very basis for knowledge sharing in a wealthy society. It's the basis for bottom-up innovation model. It's the basis for economical growth, culture, everything. Well, some people don't exactly share our views on this. You might recognize this guy. So namely, when Nicolas Sarkozy got elected, there was a number of projects, law projects, that became more and more, how to say this politely, disturbing, and where we that had in common a kind of old-school, old-fashioned, administrative, paternalist, centralized vision of what the network should be. This pattern is very well represented in the graduated response project you probably have heard about. Who heard of the French law project about graduated response among you? Oh, that's quite a lot. So, yeah, it's also called Three Strikes. Who heard it? Okay, that's a bit more hands raising in the audience. So this project, dictated by the entertainment industry, is about piracy, so-called piracy, you know, people who share cultural works without an authorization, people who escape the business models based on the centralization of distribution and on the selling of copies. Business models that were good in the 20th century, by the way, but are a bit obsolete. So in this law, people who are surveilled by private actors working for the rights holder of the content industries might be disconnected from the internet by an independent authority, administrative authority, that is not the judicial authority, that has the power so to disconnect the people from internet and forbidding them from getting a new connection. But that's not the only scary thing. This is the so-called third strike, but this is not the most scary thing in our opinion. That the whole purpose of this law is to circumvent the judicial authority. You see, the major companies, the entertainment industries, try to sue their consumers, their clients, for years, in order to make them stop sharing music and films. And it just didn't work. So if it didn't work with justice, let's just bypass the justice. So the idea was to build this administrative authority that has inquiry powers that allows it to access to any connection data stored by any provider, access provider to the internet. Such a power to access any connection data only exists in some anti-terrorist units of the police. So this is a very disturbing power that is given to an authority that is not the judicial authority. And then all the inquiries did by this authority are based on IP addresses. You all know what IP addresses are, how they're assigned, how they're shared, how they're masqueraded, how they're proxified, and etc. So the only proof that has this authority for disconnecting people from the internet is IP address, digital proof, so-called digital proof. So the whole procedure is worthless. So this is very disturbing. We think it's a very big restriction to fundamental rights and freedom, such as the right to a due process, the right to privacy, and we can argue whether the right to being connected to internet in the 21st century is a fundamental right or not. But this is for France. This is our problem, I shall say. The problem is the guy you saw on the previous slide got the presidency of the European Union for 6 months. Hopefully it will end in a very few days now, which will give us some relief. And during those days, we happened to realize that a new export for France was becoming its legislation. We encountered this by total random series of events, but we happened to find that directives, European law, called Telecoms Package were in the process of being reworked, revised. So this is Europe. This is how you make a European directive. This is the co-decision procedure. It's very, very simple and straightforward. And so we were approximately at step one of this revision of the European law regulating the network. The little "you are here" sign was added. And this is the current state of the telecoms package. We are at step nine right now. And so at this very early stage of a rework of the European network regulation, we encountered some bits of text that we found very problematic. I'm going to get into the even more boring part of the talk right now. Be warned. Open your mailer, do something else. I'll show you a few bits of text. So this is the initial part of the initial text proposed by the Commission to the Parliament, and this is a few samples I want to show you. Here you can see that subscribers of internet access are clearly informed of any limitations imposed by the provider on their ability to access and distribute lawful content or run any lawful application and services of their choices. So this might not look so disturbing at first, but then you might ask yourself, what is lawful content? What is lawful application and services? Who here can give the definition of such a thing? And especially talking about lawful application, I don't know if there are any free software users among here. Who shall tell what application is lawful or not, and what happens if you modify an application and try to run it? So this is a legal bomb, so to say. This is extremely vague wording that will allow, in the implementation by the member states, any possible interpretation that will give the latitude to any judicial or parajudicial authority the opportunity to say, oh, yeah, this is not lawful content. Yeah, block this. Remove this. Remove the right. You see? Informed on any limitation imposed by the provider. So now you consider there is lawful content and unlawful content. And now you can impose limitation on who accesses what. So this is completely unbearable, intolerable. You see? On the very next paragraph of the initial proposal, subscribers are clearly informed of their obligation to respect copyright and related rights. Uh-huh, we thought. Uh-huh. Who would write such a thing, if not the entertainment industries we've been fighting for so many years? So, you see, there is some lawful content, and by extension, some content isn't lawful. And you shall be informed of what is copyright and related right. So this looks like a clear definition of what those people wanted. And so we begin communicating on this, saying, okay, so there might be a hijack in progress of the law by the content industries. And people, come on, you're paranoid. There's no problem with this law. Oh, yeah, sure. Then what is this awful content about? I now will show you a few of the amendments that were voted through the stages of the co-decision before the vote in the Parliament, in the committee works of the Parliament. So the Parliament has many small committees about cultural affairs, about law, about foreign commerce, about security, etc. And those commissions work on bits of the text, and then the text is voted by the whole Parliament. So you have many points of entry for bringing weird stuff into a law. And as the process went on, we saw more and more of those weird bits appearing. So here are a few examples. In this one, you see that in order to ensure that users' ability to access or distribute lawful content or to run any lawful application or service of their choice is not unreasonably restricted. This is good. Who would want to unreasonably restrict access to lawful content? I think you're all intelligent people, so there's no need to explain furthermore the danger of such a thing. You can see in the end, I like this very much, because the whole formulation is made to make you believe that this is a good thing, this is for protecting people. So to ensure that your ability to access content is not unreasonably restricted, you see, you ensure that national regulation authorities ensure, again, that any limitation are duly justified. You know? If they're duly justified, then they're not unreasonable. And this is the things we pinpoint in. So this alone, in a very big text, might not be that problematic. But then you add something else. Then you add that member states shall ensure that national regulatory authorities are able to oblige undertakings providing connection to inform subscribers of any change to any restriction imposed by the undertaking on their ability to access blah, 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 lawful content. So now you make the national authorities, the regulation authorities, enter the game and advise on changes, on restrictions of access. Okay, let's move on. Oh, what's that? The same national regulation authorities shall, as far as appropriate, of course, and not beyond, promote cooperation between undertakings providing electronic communication networks and or services and the sectors interested in the promotion of lawful content. Now you get the third brick. In some version of those amendments seen in the curled committees, the sectors were interested in the promotion and protection of lawful content. You see? So you got national authorities that make sure that the service providers will cooperate with the content industries in limiting access to content. This is exactly the mechanism of the graduated response, except that instead of a clear cut, a clear disconnection of the user access, you might invent any stupid, of course, mechanism of content filtering or restriction to this and that. This is an open door for making both the French hardcore version of the graduated response and any other flavor of such a stupid scheme. So, this is where we begin to get really scary and noisy about it. And this is another bit we found in the very same text, saying, traffic data may be processed by any natural or legal person for the purpose of implementing blah, 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 and to ensure the security. So this is a totally different matter. This is not the graduated response. This is not the rights holder of the entertainment industries lobbying anymore. This is now some security providers. This is people like Symantec, not to name them, and a few editors who would really, really love for their business to collect any traffic data they could get. And this is written. This was to be written in the law, saying, oh, anybody can collect traffic data. What? What? Personal data? What is that? Privacy? Nah, come on. You're so 20th century. It's so obsolete. And so here and there in the text, this is examples, but we saw also problematic dispositions about open doors to implementation of, to imposition of security measures, such as trusted computing and very other disturbing bits. So we started communicate on this. We started launching press releases, naming the people who were responsible for the committees who were drafting those bits, saying this is a maneuver from the rights holders of the entertainment industries, from the French presidency. We got transmitted a letter that was sent by the French cinema lobby to some MEPs saying, oh, please, we need better fight against piracy. Please do implement the cooperation between the rights holders and the previous amendment I showed you. So as soon as we were beginning to say, hey, there's a graduated response in this law, People are like, nah, come on, you're paranoid, there's nothing. No, you see the evil where there's nothing to worry about. But then we had this letter to show, to say, hey, look at this. We have evidence now. And so we could say that this was the first step of analysis. This is a picture done by Mamadon from Spain that pretty well summarized the whole thing. You got a guy, a French president, European Union president, serving the law for discographies mayores, and obviously some private corporate interests that were served before the general interest. So this is for the theory, this is for the analytical part. This was obviously the first part of our work. I told you it was boring because you saw here four of such amendments. In the end, there were something like 800. Some of them were seen in 20 different versions. You had versions that didn't even have a number on them, and that changed a few times during the same day, during the negotiations that weren't public between people of the European Parliament. So we had to be there at that moment and literally get piles that high of paper, of amendments, and go through them as fast as we could to know where were the problems, in order to say it to the few contacts we had into the Parliament, in order to guide the negotiations, in order for people to understand that we were watching, that we were understanding, and that we were communicating about it, and that they would have to face their responsibility. And so, this was for the dark part of the picture, the bad things being written in the text. But once you're inside, once you have good contacts with the MEPs, once they're aware of the problematics you're talking about, once they understand that you know what you're talking about, then you can work with them. And you can work with them towards patching, which is a law. You see, Larry Lessig used to say that code is law. In the cyberspace, the code is the law of the digital environment. I used to say that in the same regard, law is code. It's badly written code. Most of the time it contains bugs. If you run it through a compiler, it would shout at you like hell. And what we tried to do with our action was to open up the process in the fashion of GPL code. You see, put the bits publicly in a repository and say, hey, look at this. We can improve it. Submit a patch. Read the fucking manual and submit a patch. And this is one of such patches. You've heard of Amendment 138. Who heard about it? That's quite a lot for an amendment, don't you think? Well, it's a bit of legal code that says, so the national regulation authorities and the member states, blah, 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 apply the principle that no restriction may be imposed on the fundamental rights and freedoms of end users without a prior ruling by the judicial authorities. And this is what really matters in this text. So they were saying, no, don't worry, there is no graduated response at all in the telecoms package. Nobody would want the national regulation authorities that impose restriction on access. No. Of course, we do respect the judge. Yeah, we might write those few bits here and there, but we do respect the judicial authority as the guardian of fundamental freedom, right? Yeah. Okay, so if you do so, why not write this in the law? Why would there be a problem to write this in the law? Of course, restrictions of freedom can only be applied by the judicial authorities because we're in democracy and we're respecting the separation of the powers and such principles like this. And this was an absolute killer for the French graduated response, which I told you depended on the fact that you bypass the judicial authorities and you render a form of justice by administrative authority. And at this stage, we're now in the beginning of September. We spend the whole month of September in Brussels, running around the corridors of the European Parliament. So at this stage, we helped getting this amendment tabled by collecting signatures, by going in the offices of the MEPs one by one. MEPs are the members of European Parliament. Going into their offices one by one and say, oh, look at this. Why wouldn't you want this to be written into the law? And say, why don't you sign this? And then you get 40 signatures. And if you get 40 signatures on an amendment, then it is presented in plenary. Then the whole parliament will be able to vote on it, and this will become the law. So this is basically the patching process through way of amendment. You take a text, you understand everything that is problematic, you write the opposite, and you try to convince the whole parliament to vote it. Sounds simple, huh? Thank you. Well, actually, it's not that simple. We're in the beginning of September. We're launching a campaign. We're designing European flags using Inkscape. And we started a platform on our wiki, a very simple, not very sexy page. By the way, if there are some graphic designers among the audience with spare cycles, please contact us. So basically, it was a condensed version of our knowledge on the process, of our knowledge of what was going on, and of our knowledge of what we thought was the right things to do to correct it. So you see here the summary. We had a banner for everybody to put on his website. We have a few news we thought were important. We had detailed argumentation on what is graduated response, the proofs that it was in the telecoms package. Why was it bad? Why even the term lawful content by itself was a very dangerous and problematic thing. What was the Bono amendment, the 138 I showed you right before? Why those amendments 34 and 139 were absolutely required to be removed from the text, whatever happened, etc., etc. Then was a page, a bit of the page about calling your MEP, how you could try to call your member of European Parliament to explain him this, a few tips and tricks on how to call your member of Parliament. They're not all of them evil. Most of the time, you will get to talk to their assistants. The assistants are young people. The average, I think, is 25 years old. So there are people who are in our generation, who use internet every day, and who might understand what you say, even if their member of parliament doesn't. So it's quite an easy contact, and we were explaining to everyone how to do this. And this bit I liked a lot, and I had lots of fun writing, was an example phone conversation. Saying, hello, I am first, last name, I live in country, where you're a member of European Parliament. I am status of profession, I am concerned about the effects of telecoms package. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, he's very busy at the moment. Yes, but I really would like to know, what does he think of this and this and that? Will he vote for this amendment? Well, I don't know. Well, can you get to know? Well, maybe we call you back. Okay, I'll call you back. And this kind of social tricks, you get to know when 10 times you did it and you hung up and said, oh, great, they will call me back. And obviously they didn't. You have to call back, and you have to make them understand that you will call back, whatever happens. Resistance is futile. And so we had great feedback on this part of the page, and we got mail very quickly from people saying, oh, they say to me there is no problem at all. Okay. So we began a list of the most blocking, incorrect arguments people heard on the phone, saying, oh, there's no problem. Oh, okay, thank you. No. Oh, you said there's no problem, but I read that. Oh, no. Yeah, but yeah, this was corrected. Oh, you said this was corrected, but I read that. And so we were kind of debugging in real time the whole process, helping people contribute their code. So this is the very central part of the campaign by itself. But this is a page of a fantastic tool developed by Gérald Cedrati d'Inagibus, some of you know already. The tool is called Political Memory, and I will talk about it a bit more later. And it's a way of tracking the members of European Parliament in order to find them, to get in contact with them, and to keep track of what they are doing inside the Parliament. So this is the documentative part, where you can see where Jeannelie Fourtou, who is the wife of Jean-René Fourtou, the president of the directoire of Vivendi Universal. Oh, no. No, come on, no. So you can see where her office is located into the building of the parliament. You can see a phone number. You just have to click to call her using your favorite voice over IP software. You can click to send an email, of course. But you also can see the committees she's a member of. And by clicking the committee, you see the list of the other members of the committee. And this is a very, very useful tool that some assistants in the parliament were about. So we provided this tool in order for people to reach more easily their members of parliament. And the final output of our analysis, and Gibus once again played a very important part into this, so if he's watching the stream, I thank him so much, produced this voting list that is almost exactly in the same format of the voting list the members of European Parliament have on the table while they are voting. It's exactly a multi-column thing with the number of the amendment here, with the what it is amending, what it is about. We added it because we had pages where we sorted the amendments by topic in order to better understand what was going on. Then which committee outputted the amendment, and our advice for voting with a minus minus or a plus plus, and etc., which is once again the standard codes used inside the parliament to give voting recommendation, and of course our comment on why to vote. So the vote was on 24th of September, so we're about the 21st of September, and there are tens of thousands of emails, phone calls, and faxes rushing into the European Parliament. People in the offices are getting a bit tensed and stressed out about the situation. It's a very good metric for them to understand that the topic is hot, that the phone keeps ringing about it. And so they say, oh, there might be something going on about this telecoms package thing. Have you heard about it? No? Have you heard about it? I heard this guy, I think he knows about it. You heard about it? What this? Voting list? And the voting list was being output on 785 faxes, fax machines. And basically we did all we could. So here was the vote. And before maybe I detail the result of the votes, Marcus here from Netzpolitik will detail us a bit what was at this very moment the forces in presence, whether the lobby forces or the political forces in the different parties. Marcus.
Hi. I try a bit because it's not that easy. Can't we switch the cam? Okay. Yeah, it's not that easy because it's a bit complex what's happening within the parliament and within the lobby groups. First, before I switch to the lobby groups, there's one political demand what we have to get more transparency and participation on the European level. If you see, All the amendments, there have been more than 800 different amendments, and we and the members of parliament almost saw them 2 days before a vote. Sometimes it was just 1 day before a vote. So you can imagine, nobody has a clue what about to vote, and all the people get a voting recommendation list, and just go, oh, plus sounds good, double plus sounds better, minus I shouldn't vote for it, but they have no clue what they are voting about. So for get more transparency and participation on the European level, we need more time for democracy. And that's a demand. I hope they will get it. Okay, then we have the European Parliament, what you can see. There are several fractions. You almost know it from the national level. There are fractions like the Social Democrats, the Christian Democrats, the Liberals, the Socialist Communists, the Greens, the totally right-wings, the confused. Several fractions, because sometimes there are people from England who are against the EU and are a bit confused too, and they find each other with politicians from other countries who are also a bit confused, but they need a group status, because then they get printers and more offices and stuff like that. So that's normal. For example, comparing to Germany, there's no Fraktionszwang, we call it. In Germany, it's totally easy. If the Christian Democrats say, we vote for this, then everyone within the fraction of the Christian Democrats votes for this. But this is the European Parliament, 25 countries. The Christian Democrats are not the same. They are totally, they have another opinion. We can use it. So it's also not that easy to say who are our friends and who are not. We can, if we take a look to the political memory, the number one was, what was his name? Le Pen. I'm so sorry for our French friends. He was the only one who took all our recommendations and just said yes. His wife too.
I'm so sorry, Marcus, but I wanted to hide this from my presentation. I took great care of this. You blew my effect.
Yeah, I just wanted to show the problem.
Transparency, okay.
Yeah. So we can say altogether, it's a political memory, that the green fraction and the left wing socialist fraction, the Reds are called socialists, but what is the name of the radical left wings? Yeah, GUE. Do they have their real name? Okay, yeah, GUE. The radical left wings. They are almost on our side when we take a look at the political memory. The Social Democrats, it's a bit more confused, as you might know from Germany or other countries. Sometimes they want the good thing, but they do the bad thing, and they always believe they do the good thing. So we can go into the Social Democrats fraction, and we have nearly two as big wings, and it's always not so easy to find the people to get them, but it's easy. You should just try it. Then we have the Liberals. Liberals is a bit problem within the telecom package, because there's Alexander Alvaro, a young German liberal, who thinks he's very liberal, but he is the spokesperson for the e-privacy directive. So he's the coordinator for the whole thing. And e-privacy, you might think it's about our privacy, but it's sometimes about the privacy of some companies who have other interests. And so the Liberals are always a bit confused within the European Parliament which privacy they mean. The privacy of some companies, the Business Software Alliance on the one side, big American companies, or our privacy as European citizens. And so there's a problem. They think they are very liberal and demanding privacy, but they are always doing some bad deals behind closed doors. So they need more lobbying too. Christian Democrats, you might think that's a problem. Yes, it is.
What was very interesting about the liberals, the center group, it's quite big in the European Parliament, and you need them in order to get a majority. Neither the right nor the left by itself gets a majority, so it gives a kind of culture of the coalition, a consensus culture, and usually the center group is very divided. There are very diverse parties gathered into this ALDE group, and so on many of the topics we followed, sometimes you have half of it going for and half of it going against. It's kind of really centric point of view. And on this very specific part of the telecoms package, we had contact with very good people inside the ALDE group, young progressist members of European Parliament. Most of them were under 45 years old, who clearly understood the stakes. And I heard the day before the vote that some of them had built an internal voting list that was an alternative voting list to the one that was made by the party, that was made according to our recommendation, and that they send to their friends and related members. So we really managed on this point to infiltrate the center group in order for divide it to our advantage. And I think this is the key to getting a coalition and to getting your votes in the parliament, is to split the parties. If a party line is vote against this, find some person inside of it who have an interest in voting for, and help them building a split inside the party. This is what we did for the center. Some persons in the right wing were for us. And it was funny what you said, Marcus, about the cultural differences among the member of European Parliament, is some Swedish, not to name them, conservatives were more progressist than some maybe Polish socialists. And now, there was this Christopher Fjellner guy who afterwards was calmed down by his party, to say the least, but who for some time was an important voice. He was a young guy and he was convinced. We talked with her and he told her that for his brother that was 15 years old, internet was a kind of courtyard, like a schoolyard. So he realized the importance of internet in the life of everybody. And it was funny to see that a conservative can be more progressist than some other with a socialist label. And I said Polish, but I could have said any other country. It's not a matter of country, it's not a matter of party, it's a matter of people. And when you find the right people, then you can get some results. And now to talk about the results themselves, there were the votes, so on the 24th of September, in first reading in plenary session. On the amendments, we flagged with minus, minus, minus. There were three of them, I think. All of them were rejected. On the amendments, we flagged with minus, minus. I think something like 80% were rejected. The word lawful content was written 15 to 20 times in the whole package. It's now only 3 times left. And during the debates, everybody agreed that no, the telecoms package is not the correct place for talking about content.
Oh, yeah, not really. Because everybody was talking about, when we came there and told them, it's not about copyright. Oh, no, it's not about copyright. Nobody mentioned ever copyright within this debate. And then after the vote, I've been to an internal alternative hearing of the French government here in Berlin to talk about the graduate response. And Ruth Hieronymus, German conservative member of parliament, has been there. And she was really speaking there, because there was no press except me and my recorder, that, oh, sure, it was always about copyright. And we just mentioned it to the people who came from outside that it's not about copyright.
And so it was not about copyright, so we got rid of most of the bits that were copyright related. And the Bono Amendment, Amendment 138 I showed you, was voted by a very strong majority of 88% of the members of European Parliament, which is 574 for and 73 against, which is a very, very high number. And in the people voting against, you had all the anti-Europe right-wing nut jobs. You had some of the centrists, who, the Vivendists, around Jean-Élie Fourtou and the other very, very close from Vivendi interests. You had some extreme right, fascisto, whatever. And you had the whole block of the French right-wing UMP. So it was a kind of French right-wing against the rest of Europe on this point, which was another proof that it was clearly about serving the interest that Nicolas Sarkozy was trying to serve by imposing this graduated response scheme. So we were quite happy with this. But this was not the final step for us, as it is not the final step for the directive itself. We managed to trigger some, how's it called again, roll call votes. A roll call vote is a vote where instead of just raising your hand to say for or against, you have to press those shiny little buttons.
You call it e-voting.
Yeah, kind of. Kind of local parliament-centric e-voting. And so we managed to trigger roll call votes on, let's say, 99% of all the amendments we cared about, in order to be able to present the results on, so this is political memory I told you about, in order to present the results MEP by MEP, country by country, political group by political group, and be able to give scores to everyone. You know, in a culture where numbers matter so much, and it's about efficiency, and as a matter of fact, a few months before a European election, it could be very useful for people to know who votes what when it comes to legislating crap. No, you cannot say crap in a mic. Making bad laws about the internet. So you can see here that the Green Group is the first one with 85 on out of 100. The Nordic Green Left and the group of the European United Left, it's the far left, is just beyond. Then you got the non-attached members that contain the fascists. Then you got the independent. We also sorted them by members of European Parliament. So you do not see the first and the second one, and Marcus blew my cover, because the first one was Jean-Marie Le Pen and the second one was his daughter, Marine Le Pen. So, but right afterwards, there are a lot of green to clean up the mess. And so those notes were attributed, given quite an elaborate ponderation. And hello again, Gibus, if you're watching. And thank you again. You see here the coefficients that were given according to the importance we set on the different amendments, which allowed us, this is the score for Jean-Élie Fourtou, the Vivendi girl I told you about. So I guess, final score is 26. Not bad. Could have been worse. And we really do help, we really do hope that this will help people in the upcoming election process, and also in understanding how the political and legislative process goes along when it comes to legislating. But we really also hope that for the next steps, it will help us to get better influence on the second reading of the package itself. Maybe, Marcus, you can make a few comments at this point on the campaign by itself, and then we will talk about the perspectives for the package and the rest of our actions.
Okay, there will be a second reading. We have no clue when it will be, but the European elections are at the end of May, so we think it's about between beginning of April and the end of April, so before Easter or after Easter. The most important time will be between the middle of January and the middle of February, because then the parliament is debating within the circles or the changing amendments and what came from the member states of the European Union. So we need every helping hand to help us. There are always some formal things when La Quadrature du Net releases press texts, for example. They are almost in French or in English, so we have a more or less international language with English within the European Union, but we need people who translate it very fast to several languages, for example Germany. We need more people who do this. We need designers, so we don't have to do the design too. We need people who can do it better than us to help us prepare more stickers, buttons, banners, and videos, mashup videos. We got some, but they could be better.
Stickers.
We need more stickers. We need money. We need money to fund apartments or hotel rooms in Brussels to pay for internet and stuff like that. We can do it without money, but it would be easier to do it with money. So it's not always the best thing to sleep in a sleeping bag on the floor if you, you have to wear a suit and to go back to the parliament on the next day. We need more help to inform the members of parliament. So we need more group dynamic things that lots of people call the MEPs. That's your chance. We have the introduction Jermaine showed. You just need to call your members of parliament. It's very easy. You just need to read the text we provide you. You just need to insert your name. Not just read the name.
In order to take action, we really noticed that the most important thing for a member of European Parliament is to have real persons, so to say, citizens, concerned citizens, and not lobbyists who call them. And you cannot imagine the impression it makes on them to have a honest, real citizen who is not used to talk legal, complex matters and who is not a speech rehearsed 100 times before. Just say, hey, there is a problem. Look at this. What can you do? I voted for you. Do something for me now, please.
And I will vote for you maybe. Next month. the elections are a great chance for us to demand a free internet.
So I guess we have some extra time because we waited for the microphone. So it means we will have time for questions, but I think it's about time to conclude by now. So please subscribe to our RSS feed. Please come and check our wiki often. Please subscribe to our mailing list. Come to our chat room. How do you say this in... Yeah, on IRC, but how do you say the character? Dash? Yeah, dash la quadrature on freenode.net. Please send us email when you find something that is going wrong. Send us patches if you find grammar errors or translation errors or something. And remember that la quadrature is your quadrature. It is a toolbox. It is a big hunch of code, and as every code, you can help improving it and contribute to the repository. So let's talk again about this, I hope, around the second reading and all the upcoming legislations, because our opponents will never stop attacking us. But we have to keep in mind that whatever happens, in the end, we win. Thank you very much.
So, questions?
We have time for questions, I know that.
And we have two mics.
Yep. No question from Benjamin. Anyone else than Benjamin for a question? There's a question over there. Please take a mic for the people watching the stream.
Thanks. You said that the election might be a good chance to elect the better people next time, but isn't it also a risk factor that you have to start again convincing a lot of new members of the European Parliament, etc.? What do you think about it? Is it more a chance or more risk? What is your impression? What is your feeling?
Oh, I think it's both. For example, Ruth Hieronymus, the most evil Christian conservative member of parliament, she drops out. So maybe we have luck to get more competent and more internet-friendly member of parliament for the cultural conservative positions. Otherwise, we hope that there will be more younger people coming into the parliament. Because younger people more understand the value of a free internet, they have more integrated the internet into their lives, and they are easier to convince than old people who have no clue what it is about. So we will see.
And to add on Marcus, it's up to us to make those stakes be into the campaign. There is room for us to make internet and digital technology regulation a campaign argument. I hope in the next months you will see platforms and tools and initiatives that will help those issues being raised. And then before the vote, people will be able to ask, hey, you're a candidate. What will you do about internet? What would have you done on the telecoms package? What would you do on this and this issues? So it's everybody's opportunity to do so. And right before an election, you would be impressed on how receptive the politicians seem to be. And so if you ask them a question and they answer, of course I do care, of course I love you, of course I will vote for what you're talking about, you can note it down, you know? You can publish it on the internet because the internet never forgets. Yes? No, I said no question from Benjamin.
Okay, just in relation to Clause 5 of the directive in terms of the requirement to inform customers about restrictions on the use of lawful content and applications. Now, obviously this is going to be sold as being a protection, in fact, of consumer rights, okay? And it is the case that in a lot of European jurisdictions there is throttling taking place of peer-to-peer services, and there are other restrictions being placed on voice over IP services and things like that. So I just want to ask if you talk a little bit about this, and also I think there's going to be a very important point to be very clear on in terms of the campaign and the literature, because of course any type of reference to lawful content means that it's creating the context for the persecution of so-called unlawful content. But we've got to keep the two things absolutely clear. I mean, I'm from Ireland. My internet service is using deep packet inspection in order to throttle peer-to-peer traffic, and this is going to be a real issue for a lot of people. So I think if you could talk a little bit about that and also be really clear with the literature about it.
I thank you so much for your question, because this is a major point I forget to make. I forgot to make in my presentation. Actually, the second reading of the telecoms package will happen in the next few weeks and months. And there are some first signals at the very moment that this specific issue of network neutrality, because this is what we're talking about, this very specific issue of network neutrality might be at the center of the second reading. We are seeing right now amendments from corporate actors that say, oh, it's okay to restrict access and speed and whatever for reasonable purposes. You see the reasonable and unreasonable? Yeah, for a reasonable network management policies and things like this. So we do feel that some operators are pushing very hard right now for such things to happen. And it will be our objective, it will be our mission, so to say, to provide other information on why those techniques are bad, why they can be harmful for the whole digital ecosystem, and why in the end they will not work for the objectives that are announced. So yes, yeah, stay tuned, and if you're a specialist in those questions, please help us, contact us. Maybe you can help by writing a one-page note about network throttling in Ireland and why it sucks. And maybe this can be added to the dossier we can transmit to the MEPs at some point. So feel free to contact us and participate and keep an eye on those issues.
I have a question regarding funding of you persons. You do a great job, Benjamin, Eric Josephson, and there are many more. And I know that most of you have very little income or maybe some private income. I know that Adri has some money available, but it's not really going into any one of you. Are there any other institutions or ways anyone in the room can think of helping these people? Because I think it's really bad that these really highly skilled people and who do their really utmost best to help to protect our future don't get any income. I think that should be worked on.
Actually, there will be a thank you. You will see a hat running in the room. A white hat. A white hat. Of course, this is a major issue. This is a question that is very often raised. So far, we were very lucky to get private fundings, grants from organizations. We're in the process of getting new ones. We're building a structure in France. Actually, La Quadrature du Net has no legal structure, but friends of us are building a legal structure that is called Fonds de Défense de Neutralité du Net that will be used with very strict rules of governance and a board and etc. to collect money in order to grant it back to associations or structures like ours. So luckily, we were funded so far, and we have a visibility for the upcoming 6 months. So this shall cover the second reading of the telecoms package and the end of the French process of graduated response, which are our first tactical short-term objectives. And then we'll see afterwards. Okay, one question from Benjamin, because that's not fair. But no troll.
There is one basic problem with the process, is that once you have the position of the first reading of the parliament, in the second reading you cannot reintroduce new amendments, except if you have a new parliament. So you talk about net neutrality, and the person from Ireland raised this issue. My first question is, on the position of the parliament, does the position of the parliament on net neutrality is okay for you or not? And secondly, if it's not okay, how do you plan to fix it if you cannot reintroduce new amendments?
So I will not disclose some strategic points that might at this stage be kept secret? No, it was just a way of saying that we don't know yet. I guess there is a way to pass amendments on the committee stage. I think so, because we see amendments flowing already. So I guess the committees will give reports including amendments, and that at this stage you can. I didn't know that on the plenary you couldn't get the same thing of 40 signatures gives plenary amendment, but I will check the articles 250 and 251 of the whatever treaty that talks about this. And yeah, that's a good point. Maybe we shall form a kind of coalition, a very simple one, with very simple objectives of explaining the benefits of network neutrality and gather support from associations, from corporate actors, from people saying, hey, network neutrality is this, it is good, and here are the amendments that endanger it, so please repel them. So this might be an option. Another option would be to... Two minutes? Okay, yeah, sure. Another option would be to, if we can do so, to pass another amendment that say none shall be restricted access to content or something very, broad like this. Maybe we have time for some other question. We have 1 minute 30. No? Dennis, let's close it. Thank you very much for your attention.